8580 or visit peacecorps.gov.
The wolf population in Wisconsin and the upper Midwest, for that matter, is alive and well. Bob Bosel here at the northern end of the world's longest barn, and that was acknowledged earlier this year when the wolf was taken off the endangered species list in the upper Midwest. And Josh, I would assume that means our Department of Natural Resources here in Wisconsin is getting ready to control that herd even more, that bunch of wolves we have.
Yeah, Bob, they certainly are. They're gearing up for it. November 6th is the date that they are aiming for. It's Josh Scramlin here at the southern end of the world's longest barn in Madison. So decades ago, gray wolves were hunted to near extinction. And then in 1978, the federal government rolled out the Endangered Species Act, and the wolf became federally protected. So in those over four decades of being protected, the wolf population ballooned from a handful here in Wisconsin to over 1,000. And they've caused some real life issues for farmers with any sort of livestock who couldn't do anything about the issues that they were having. So like you said earlier this year, January 4th, to be exact, the wolf was delisted, and now the DNR will handle things. So I had the chance to catch up with Keith Warnke. He's the administrator of the Division of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks at the DNR. And he says that Wisconsin will have a wolf hunting season this year, and they're gearing up for it.
We will have a wolf hunting season, hunting and trapping season, that will begin November 6th, 2021, if the law doesn't change at all. And we will also be able to have a full suite of depredation tools available to respond to wolf depredations for livestock producers.
Right. And just so everybody's on the same page, depredation is when a wolf, or any other predator for that matter, kills or maims a domestic animal. And for Wisconsin livestock producers that were experiencing wolves killing their animals, they couldn't do anything about it before. They basically just had to watch it happen because the wolf was federally protected, but it no longer has those protections. So what does that mean to responding to a wolf attack now?
Livestock depredation is very important. We will have the full suite of tools available for responding to depredation events again. And that includes some of the tools, well, all of the tools that are currently being implemented, but also wolves are delisted. We will have the ability to use lethal removal methods in areas where depredations have occurred. So working with USDA Wildlife Services, that once again will become a tool in the toolbox for responding to farmers and livestock producers' concerns.
In a little more plain English, just because I don't want there to be any confusion when it comes to something this serious. So the wolf was delisted on January 4th, but the hunting season doesn't actually begin until November 6th of this year. So for farmers that are wanting to protect their livestock, what is legal and what is illegal from now until November?
Well, following the effective date of January 4th, state laws allow people on private land, the landowner, lessee, or occupant of the land, or some other person with permission, can kill wolves in the act of killing or wounding or biting a domestic animal. And if they do that, then they must report that to the department within 24 hours, and the department will come out and collect the carcass.
All right, that's what I was looking for, because I want people to understand that it's not open season on wolves now that they aren't federally protected, but the DNR and both livestock and pet owners, for that matter, have more leeway on dealing with those things on their own. And then, Keith, there's over 1,100 wolves in our state. Are they in the northern regions for the most part?
Yeah, for the most part, I would say the northern third to northern half of Wisconsin, where we have much more forested cover, is where we have the vast majority of our wolves. There are some packs that stretch out into central Wisconsin, Marathon, Juneau, Adams counties, places like that. But the majority of them are in the north.
Any idea how many Wisconsinites will be able to get a wolf license for the inaugural season this year?
Well, we have some idea. Don't really know anything about the numbers. Certainly that will be a public process, too, where we engage a lot of our partners to help come up with or provide input on what a quota would be. But then when you have a quota, then you calculate a anticipated success rate, which would determine the number of permits that would be available. And then we have an application period and a drawing process for the number of permits that are available.
When it comes to managing the wolf population, what are the things that you're really zeroing in on?
Oh, sure. Well, we're really focused on transparent, inclusive participation in the development of this management plan. And then we're really going to want that management plan to guide wolf population and wolf management decisions going forward. And of course, it's going to be a long process with a ton of public input. We know that, and we fully encourage that. And also will likely be, you know, an iterative plan, which will give us options for management going forward.
As the DNR pieces together their wolf management plan, are you seeking input from the public? Like if a livestock producer got a hold of you guys, would you be open to what they had to say?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They can get a hold of DNR and provide all of that kind of input. There will be a long and open public input process, so you don't have to jump on the phone right now. This is going to be transparent. It's going to be wide open. It's going to be well publicized, and there'll be a lot of time for public input.
That's Keith Warnke. He is a division administrator with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources and one of the folks heading up the wolf management plan that will be rolled out later this year. So obviously this is all fresh. We don't have a lot of specifics, but we will bring those details to you as we find them out. So the wolf being delisted certainly makes Wisconsin farmers happy, especially those that have lost animals to a wolf attack. Ryan Klusendorf is a dairy farmer in Taylor County. He milks 120 cows. They also do rotational grazing, so a lot of cows outside all the time. So, Ryan, when did you first start having issues with gray wolves?
Our experience with wolves started a few years ago. I want to say back in like 2011, maybe. And we had heifers out in pasture and were constantly getting out one summer. And we knew when we got them back that they were agitated, they, you know, huge flight risk. You could not handle them. And when we would get calls and they'd say where they are, they'd be a mile away from the farm down the state highway. And we were just like, this is not normal. If our animals would get out, they would go to the next paddock and you find them there eating in the pasture. And that happened about three times. The third time we ended up getting the animals at a large citation, and we tried to explain to the sheriff's department every time they were out what we were dealing with, that it was wildlife. At the time, we thought it was coyotes or something. And then finally that fall, we had a cow get attacked by wolves and killed out on pasture. And that's, you know, experience I would never want to deal with again. And it's something you don't understand it until you actually deal with it, the nightmare you're going through, and the anxiety, the loss of sleep you have to deal with. Some people say, well, you got a loss you get from the state, and that should be good enough. Well, it's not, with all the other stuff you have to deal with.
Well, and walk me through how frustrating it was to have wolf attacks happen on your operation and just know that your hands were tied and you could literally not do anything about it.
Right. With the wolves being a protected endangered species act, we couldn't do anything to protect them. And if we did, I mean, we could be prosecuted in federal court and have a felony on our record. But, you know, so we're happy to see that finally the Department of Interior the time to look at this and say wolves have reached population levels where they wanted to see them and took the steps to get them removed from the Endangered Species Act. I mean, that's the whole purpose of the Endangered Species Act, was to give time for these endangered species and get the healthy population where they can be returned to state control. And that's what we've been working for the past 10 years, to get control back. And hopefully this time there won't be a judicial review of this, and that this ruling will stick and we can move on with life and be able to protect our animals.
Yeah, I know there's been some legal actions that have been taken, but it doesn't look as though anything's sticking at the moment, but knock on wood. Ryan, you said something to me before we started the interview. You guys aren't looking to just completely get rid of every single gray wolf in Wisconsin.
You know, really the thing is, I mean, we're not looking to eradicate wolf population because we know what's needed for the ecosystem of Wisconsin. We just want to make sure we have the ability to protect our families and protect our livestock and make sure the ecosystem works in harmony with the people we live with in our communities.
Ryan, you're the person I'm talking to right now because you're a big advocate for the wolves being delisted, but you're not the only Wisconsin farmer that has had these type of issues. And maybe I'm getting this wrong, but wasn't it one of your neighbors that had a flock of sheep and wolves attacked their flock? Is that right?
That, yeah. Not technically in the neighbor, but here they're down in southern Wisconsin. Yes, there's been more depredation instances in here in the last few weeks. You know, people seem to think wolves are just here in the northern part of Wisconsin, up in the Northwoods, but they have moved south. I mean, I don't know how far south, but this is, you know, southern Wood County. So it's, you're reaching the middle of state here. But, I mean, it's been as bad as kids can't go up to the school bus because wolves are out in the driveway and, you know, don't have the fear of human anymore.
Well, and in your neck of the woods, from what you've been telling me, it's not all too crazy to see a gray wolf running around.
No, it's not. I mean, every now and then we'll see them. Or, I mean, even a week ago I had some heifers out and their fence was ripped down. And, you know, I can't say for sure it was wolves, but it was definitely something because when we found them, they were in different groups split up. They were not normal behavior, you know, the kind of the same behavior I described before where when we found them, they weren't, you know, they had their ears up, head up, kind of anxiety, anxious, couldn't handle them that well. So we know they're around and are just happy that we can finally protect our livestock and hopefully, you know, get a little fear back in the wolf population so they're not around, can get a handle on it, manage them safely.
That is Ryan Klusendorf. He is a dairy farmer in Taylor County. As of January 4th, farmers such as Ryan have been given the green light to protect their livestock against gray wolf attacks, and that's something that they weren't able to do before because the animal was on the Endangered Species Act. It was delisted, and according to the Wisconsin DNR, if any pet or livestock or human for that matter is in danger because of a gray wolf, lethal action can now be taken as to where before that was illegal. The gray wolf hunting season kicks off on November 6th of this year. And for the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Josh Scramlin.
This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Youngke.
Winter's a great time to tackle projects. Let Blaine's Farm and Fleet get those projects done faster with our wide assortment of products. We carry everything from nuts and bolts to tools and tires and all kinds of feed and bedding. Right now, Hillman Grade 2 Hex nuts, bolts, and washers, just $1.79 a pound. Keep your flock happy with NatureWise feed. Choose from 40-pound bags of Hardy Hen and Feather Fixer or 50-pound bags of Country Feeds Egg Producer feed, now $2 off. And stock up on 25-pound bags of NutriStart Kid Non-Medicated Milk Replacer and 25-pound bags of Advanced Lamb Non-Medicated Milk Replacer. Your choice, just $39.99. Save 10% on select tractor parts and tune-up kits. Select Stanley tractor replacement mufflers and rain caps, Apache hydraulic hose assemblies, Data roller chains, and Delavan hydraulic cylinders. And mark your calendars for Chick Days coming soon. Go to farmandfleet.com for all the details. That's genuine value from Blaine's Farm and Fleet.
Our traffic laws are important safety rules designed to protect all of us. Sometimes, though, even if you do everything right, another driver may break those rules. Clifford and Raihala knows how often negligent drivers break the rules, how drunk or distracted drivers cause serious injuries and millions of dollars in other losses every year. While no one can eliminate the risk from negligent drivers, there are important steps you should take after a crash to protect yourself from additional harm. If you've been injured, you need skilled attorneys who have the knowledge and experience to help you recover all of your losses. At Clifford and Raihala, we help people who have been hurt when someone else breaks the rules. We'll be there for you to help make things right.
For relentless dedication to helping you and your family, choose Clifford and Raihala, hardworking, skilled attorneys fighting for you. For justice, myjustice.com.
Pam Youngke is the best thing to happen to farming since pipeline milking. And she didn't make us say that. This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Youngke.
All righty, so time to catch up with what's going on weather-wise on a Friday that I guess it depends on where you are. I just got a text from my friend Stan up in the Green Bay area. Said they picked up less than an inch of snow in this past 24 hours time. I know along the Mississippi River Valley, they probably had a little bit more. Let's talk about it. Stumach Ag Meteorologist joining us. Your Ag Weather Update this morning brought to you by Compure Financial. So it's still, some areas are still being impacted by this weather front this morning, Stu, but some advisories have also been removed.
Yeah, the winter weather advisory has expired in southern Wisconsin. Everybody else still having it. La Crosse and Mauston, the winter weather advisory till 6 p.m. today. And then Beaver Dam and Fond du Lac and Oshkosh, it expires at 6 a.m., 40 minutes from now. I do have a couple of snow totals here coming in. Reedsburg and South Wayne down Lafayette County, almost the Illinois border. 2 inches of snow, just over a half at Elkhorn. And a lot of us with that wet slop and just a little cover of snow, that's kind of a real common factor right now. I think we're going to hear about north central and northwest Wisconsin having more precipitation. Low pressure is in eastern Iowa, and as it's going to drop a bit further east and southeast in the counterclockwise circulation around that low, you look at the weather radar and you can picture it. There's rain from Indiana, lower Michigan into far northeast Wisconsin, and then snow circling around that low, northern Wisconsin into eastern and southern Minnesota and down into Iowa. Well, what's going to happen with that low dropping further south and east is we'll get that little counterclockwise circulation, and the snow will pass from west into central and southern and eastern Wisconsin and finally pull away. Another small low is going to follow in as well, and that one will keep the chance of a little light snow lingering on even as we make our way on through tonight or into Saturday or Saturday night. And temperatures, they hold pretty steadily. Maybe that's something that's okay, but it also means we still may have a little mix of precipitation today. Some rain and freezing rain could mix in with that light snow now and again, but it's not going to be a major snowstorm, just kind of a slick situation. I'll have forecast details right after this.
Compeer Financial helped us get into our forever home.
They helped me expand more than acreage.
And helped our dairy grow for the next generation.
At Compeer Financial, we see potential in every plan. Our unique perspective finds solutions to your challenges. And our specially trained financial team guides you every step of the way. Partner with us to make your goals possible. Compeer.com. Compeer Financial ACA is an equal opportunity lender and equal opportunity provider. NMLS number 619731. Copyright 2021. All rights reserved.
Rural Mutual Insurance. Keeping Wisconsin strong.
Get insurance from a company who knows Wisconsin and cares about your community. You may know Rural Mutual Insurance as the number one farm insurer, but did you know they also offer competitive home and auto rates? Visit ruralmutual.com to learn more about products and discounts.
Rural Mutual Insurance, keeping Wisconsin strong.
All righty, let's talk about the rest of the day and the weekend, Stu, for those lucky folks that might have gotten tickets for the playoff game up in Green Bay tomorrow. No road issues, I hope, between now and then.
I'm sure by that time, anywhere there is snow or some iciness will be cleaned up and it ought to be just fine. But there could be a little snow globe effect now and again as we head even right on toward game time. Our Compeer Financial Ag weather update does indeed include those cloudy skies, and that little mix of light snow could be just a brief period of freezing rain or a sprinkle popping up on and off during the day. We're not going to add a whole lot more snow, maybe another inch or so in a few areas. That's about all. We hold pretty steadily toward the mid-30s today. Southeast winds become east and even north at about 5. Cloudy skies tonight. Could be a little snow or freezing rain, you know, that stray raindrop around, but we drop down to about 30, maybe an upper 20 here and there. North winds about 5 to 10. Clouds, a little morning fog, and just some scattered light snow Saturday, 34, mid-30s, if you will. North winds 5 to 15. And even Sunday, cloudy skies, scattered, very small chance of a little light snow. A bit cooler, closer to 30, northwest winds at 5. Next week, Pam, a lot more like normal. I'd say upper 20s for daytime highs, that kind of a thing, which isn't far from where we should be, and maybe a small snow chance as we look toward late in the week.
Just so long as the wind doesn't whip up all of a sudden, you know? I can handle the digits if the wind doesn't turn into nightmares.
Yeah, a little breezy tomorrow, but not like further west over toward Minnesota and the Dakotas. They've got blizzard warnings, wind gusts of 30 and 35. We're not going to get that.
Oh, good, good, good. All right, my boy, have a good weekend. We'll talk to you on Monday.
You got it. See you then.
Yep. Stu Mux, our ag meteorologist, with your weather details, brought to you courtesy of Compeer Financial. Compeer Financial Ag Weather Updates, and for an update on what's happening with your financial portfolio, don't forget, Compeer Financial is there to help, committed to agriculture and rural America. Find more details at compeer.com. Mink producers going towards the top of the list as far as priority for the COVID-19 vaccination. Why? We'll tell you.
This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Yonke.
My part-time service in the Army National Guard makes it possible for me to be more for the community I call home. My training helps me at work when I lead by example. My service in the Army National Guard allows me to keep my community and those I care about safe from threats. Learn more about how you, too, can live and serve part-time close to home by visiting NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
Student away from home? You could get a significant auto insurance discount from Prairie Land Insurance.
When other companies offer you only one solution, Madison's Prairie Land Insurance Agency offers you a wide array of personalized, affordable options. Is your current policy really the best? Talk to Prairie Land Insurance Agency, your local, independent home and auto insurance agency. For your free insurance review, call 251-3009. Prairie Land Insurance Agency.
Our best is the very least we can do.
The Madison Police Department and Madisonary Crime Stoppers need your help regarding recent gun violence. On January 5th at 11:30 a.m. in the 900 block of Stewart Street, a man pointed a handgun and threatened to shoot property owners after being refused to be let in a business. The man then reholstered his gun and left in a white Ford sedan last seen southbound on Syene Road. On January 3rd, around 7 p.m., a woman was shot while in her car near the intersection of Egan Road and Lean Road. The shots were fired from another car, and an MPD's violent crime unit is investigating. On New Year's Day morning, MPD officers responded to a local hospital for a report of a man with a gunshot wound to the stomach. The incident likely occurred on Madison's south side near Todd Drive and McDivitt Road. If you have any information regarding these recent gun violence incidents, please contact Madisonary Crime Stoppers at 266-6014 or on the web at p3tips.com. Individuals contacting Crime Stoppers can remain anonymous and may be eligible for a cash reward.
This looks like a car. It has tires, headlights, a hood, windshield wipers. The doors look like car doors. Open like them, too. There's a front seat, back seat, steering wheel. 99.9% of the time, this would be a car. But it's not. This is a bedroom. Anita Washington's for 5 weeks. There are people like Anita all across Dane County. And because the need is there, so are we. This year, we'll provide Anita and other women, children, and men with nearly 20,000 nights of shelter. Just one part of more than $1.4 million in food, clothing, furniture, and other goods and services we provide. We're St. Vincent de Paul, helping our neighbors in need.
Who was your hero when you were a kid?
Whether it was Joe DiMaggio or Jackie Robinson,
Rosa Parks or Sally Ride,
Bogart or Brando,
you're just the right age to do something important that you can be remembered for.
Even if you're in your 50s, 60s, 70s, or beyond, you can register to become an organ and tissue donor.
Surprised? You shouldn't be.
Today, people of all ages and even with health conditions can sign up to donate the gift of life.
And it's so important. Every age, every ethnicity is needed.
If we all signed up, imagine the lives we could save.
The families we could help.
So whether you admire John Wayne or James Dean, Robert Redford or Roberto Clemente,
Elvis Presley or Ella Fitzgerald, do something important that could make a real difference and change lives.
Get the facts today and register to become an organ donor.
Find out how at organdonor.gov. Or call 1-866-99-DONATE.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration.
You no longer have to hide your hands. Your hands have been taking care of everyone else. Isn't it time that you take care of your hands?
A skincare minute with skincare expert Michelle Neeson.
Did you know there are several aesthetic treatments that help your hands look brighter, healthier, and more youthful? Treatments such as broadband light and chemical or laser peels help with tone, texture, and getting rid of those stubborn age spots. Skin tight procedures can smooth out wrinkles and fine lines, as well as add new collagen. Dermal filler like Restylane Lift is used to improve the volume in the back of the hands.
The results are noticed immediately, giving you a fuller, more hydrated appearance. Most treatments can last over a year and are more affordable than you might think. Now you can show off your hands with confidence.
Let your natural beauty shine through.
Visit us at rejuvenationclinicofsaucprairie.com.
Instead, I said, you know what would be actually a breath of fresh air, even though they're getting spanked, is watching the Wisconsin Badger basketball team. It was much better than anything else on live TV, despite them getting absolutely annihilated. Zach, my first question for you is, has a 43-6 run that Michigan went on in 16 minutes and 18 seconds, a 43-6 run, do you remember anything ever happening like that to the Wisconsin Badger basketball team?
That bad? No. It was bad. I mean, a couple years ago when they lost, I guess it's 3 years ago now, they lost to Purdue, and they ended up losing by 28. It was really, really bad. But that was not unexpected because that team was a shell of itself, right? Because they didn't have Demetri Trice. They had lost Kobe King. Like, they were a shell.
Yes.
This team was supposed to be a top-10 team. This team was not supposed to have that happen to them. And, yeah, it was ugly. I can't remember anything as bad as that. I'm sure there probably is, but off the top of my head, I can't. Like, losing to North Dakota at home, you know, that's worse than what happened last night. But that was appalling.
Yeah, it was definitely appalling. It was yesterday I proclaimed on these airwaves, and shame on me, that I'm like, Nate Reaver's going to shock the world and have a complete game. And Zach, what happened?
Psych.
What?
Well, same thing that happened all year for him, man.
The first two possessions on offense for the Badgers was Nate Reaver's getting stuffed.
What did I tell you yesterday afternoon when we saw each other? I said, you, when you said that about Nate Reavers, I said, I bet you his first shot gets blocked. And I was wrong. I was wrong. His first two shots got blocked. Yeah, he.
Zach, I was trying to be the captain of hope. I was trying to do, like, yeah, you know, I was trying to be positive.
For sure. Yeah. No. It was bad. And look, like, the thing was, with what was it, 6:38 left in the first half? It was 26-23.
It was a 3-point game.
They were fine. They were fine, and then 14-0 run, and then I think a large part of it was, and Michael Potter's not going to make up for a 30-point difference, but picking up that second foul put him on the bench for the rest of the first half, and then picks up the third right away in the second half. He can't do that, especially because Nate Reavers isn't playing at a very good level right now. So, yeah, losing Micah Potter hurt at that time, but they just didn't match Michigan's intensity on either end of the court. Michigan is fantastic on both ends, and Wisconsin matched them on offense, at least for that first 14 minutes, but they never matched them anywhere close defensively, and it's just been, like, at the beginning of the year, I thought Wisconsin had an opportunity to be an elite defensive team because I thought they had a bunch of different pieces that could play a bunch of different ways.
Yeah.
And they still may get there, but they are not there right now.
Well, that's the concern, right? Because we've seen flashes. I mean, we saw it against Maryland where Wisconsin was very inept of defending, rebounding, and, you know, in the paint. And then
in the second half, yep.
And then we saw it in Indiana, too, in the second half. That defense kind of reared its ugly head. They got it back together, double overtime win. We've seen it flashes of it, but that Michigan game, wow. I mean, Zach, is this something that we should be worried about moving forward, or is this fixable for the Badgers, or is this like this will come back to bite them in the ass down the stretch?
No, I think it's. I certainly think it's fixable. Like they still have those pieces. It's not like it isn't. But this shouldn't be happening to a team that starts five seniors. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and brings another senior off the bench, Trevor Anderson. It shouldn't be happening. And Greg Gard has to figure it out. I was not overly. Greg Gard's message was positive. Demetri Trice seemed really, really down after the game.
I don't blame him.
It was at the end of the game, I think he was still in the game, but they had some other guys in there, and they were bringing energy, and he said, we need the other guys. Essentially, he said, we need the other guys to do that all the time.
Yeah.
He said there were a lot of heads down, and you can only have your head down for so long. You need to pick it up. We need to go to Rutgers and get going here. You can hang your heads for an hour, but you can't have that. So I think that this is a huge few days for them. They didn't come back home. They went back to the hotel. They're flying to Rutgers today.
Oh, okay.
They're gonna stay there today, practice there today, tomorrow, and then play on Friday. It could be a very good couple of days, or it could be a very bad couple of days.
Could we look
spending this much time together?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, this is kind of that, like, how do you gel as a team after a loss like that? Well, will they look at the managers and say, yo, did you forget to bring the juice? because they always talk about bring your own juice. Did the managers forget to bring their own juice? Because, Zach, watching this game last night, I know there was some family in the stands of Michigan, but it felt like for the first time, for me anyways, watching it, that there was actually a true home court advantage if the energy in that gym felt so oppressive on the Badgers that, and maybe just because they didn't bring their own energy, I don't know what it was, but there was something in that gym that just felt like the Badgers, no matter what they were doing, just could never shake their, I don't want to say they're shook, but shake whatever was going on with them.
If your workout includes baling hay and pitching pens, then you'll be comfortable right here. This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Youngke.
Stick around. Josh Scramlin's going to be joining us this morning. We want to recognize another one of our Wisconsin farm families that have had their operation in the family for 100 or 150 years, continuing our salute of Centennial and Sesquicentennial farmsteads across the state. This morning, Josh is going to take us to the Waupun area to visit with one of those honorees. Stick around for that. I'm PM Yankee. Now, from the Landmark Services Cooperative Agri News Desk, here's what's happening on a Friday. So today, 15th day of January. Did you know on this day, back in 2001, Wikipedia went online? That's an online encyclopedia that's now become one of the largest reference works on the entire internet. That went online as of 2001. Also on this day, happy birthday to Charo, the Gucci Gucci girl, 70 years old today. And on this day in 1967, the Green Bay Packers beat the Kansas City Chiefs in the very first Super Bowl. The game was at Memorial Coliseum in Los Angeles. 61,946 sports fans in the seats. Final score was 35-10 in favor of the Packers. For their victory, the Packers got $15,000 per player. The Kansas City Chiefs got $7,500 per player. The largest single game shares in the history of team sports at that time, obviously. Wouldn't it be nice if we could take another run at that again this year? We'll see what happens come tomorrow afternoon. Well, now you know. We want you to know that we are trying to keep an eye and an ear on what's happening when it comes to protocol and priority for the COVID-19 vaccine rollout and Wisconsin agriculture. Yesterday, it was a conversation topic during our regular monthly call with Wisconsin Ag Secretary Randy Romanski. What we've learned is that mink producers in Wisconsin are being given priority for the COVID-19 vaccine because of their exposure to animals that have a variant of the COVID-19 virus. According to the State Disaster Medical Advisory Committee, they have decided that mink producers should be at a little bit higher priority of receiving the vaccine. They say that the particular virus that mink have been exposed to could possibly pose a biosecurity risk for the current vaccine campaign for humans. Wisconsin Ag Secretary Randy Romanski explained how the conversation about protecting Wisconsin farmers has been unfolding.
The Department of Health Services is guided by the recommendations of the SDMAC, the State Disaster Medical Advisory Committee. They're leading the process to develop Wisconsin's vaccine distribution plan. They're working directly through the Department of Health Services. That process is something that we've been making available to agriculture, people from the agriculture community, so that they can participate. The process is open to public comment, and we've been encouraging members of the agriculture community to share their thoughts with that committee.
Wisconsin Ag Secretary Randy Romanski. Now, bear in mind that we have in Wisconsin seen mink that died because of COVID-19. Taylor County National Veterinary Services Laboratory confirmed dead mink there in October had died because of this variant of COVID-19. Wisconsin's got 21 mink farms in 13 counties, about 300 people that have direct contact with the animals themselves. So again, they are being given priority because of what we learned worldwide about the virus in mink. There are concerns about a viral mutation that's in the mink population in places like Denmark that had 7 different changes to the spike protein that could mean the vaccines we're working with now might be rendered ineffective. So that is why the state's Disaster Medical Advisory Committee wants to put priority on those Wisconsin mink producers. Also on the call yesterday, Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers talking a bit more about priorities that he is putting forward in his state budget. He said, "We learned a lot in light of the pandemic, and that includes how fragile our meat processing industry is."
During the pandemic, it became very clear that we needed a different type of supply line for our meat products in the state, and we hope to convince the legislature that there's wisdom in reinvigorating in various ways the regional and local processing of meat, and also help those local and regional processors get their product to market in a better way. Yes, we're always going to have the large processing that's going to happen, but if we want to take advantage of the processing or the meat system that we have here in Wisconsin, regionally and locally, we should have that option. So we'll be looking to do something in that area.
That's Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers. Some of the other priorities aside from the meat processing industry that Governor Evers shared with farm broadcasters yesterday included continued support for broadband access across the state. The governor admitted that it is going to take money, but he said, if you think about it, when rural electrification happened, there was a huge subsidy that the federal government had to make so that everyone had access to electricity, and he looks at broadband much the same way. The other area of emphasis in the governor's biennium budget is funding for farmer mental health resources. You can check more details out on all those issues if you'd like at MidwestFarmReport.com.
Farmers understand return on investment. They understand the power and the value of the sun.
Cameron Olson, owner of Olson Solar Energy.
This is just another opportunity for them to look for that power and that value. It's a business decision. Everything that farmers do and don't do on their land and their with their property is money. So one of the things that I heard one farmer say, it's a crop that I am yielding. Instead of harvesting corn on this little section, he's harvesting sunlight to make electricity. You should reach out to us, and we will come out there for a very specialized, specific quote for you to look at your farm. We can put solar anywhere. We can put it on a barn. We can put it on the ground. We can put it on a hill. So we can put it anywhere that makes sense to you and your farm and your situation. And then once we design that, even powering your whole farm, you can harvest enough sunlight to have a $0 energy bill.
Go to OlsonSolarEnergy.com to start saving. Go green, save green with Olson Solar Energy.
Barrel cheese yesterday in Chicago dropped a half a cent to $1.57.5. 40-pound block cheese down a penny at $1.90. Double A butter, that gained a penny and a quarter to $1.30 per pound. Little profit taking in our grain trade so far this morning. We've got the March corn currently trading up a half a cent at $5.34 a bushel. December new crop corn's up two at $4.59. March soybeans are down 10 and a quarter at $14.20 a bushel. November new crop beans down two at $11.94. July wheat, that's currently up 8 cents at $6.63 a bushel. The fluid milk contracts for February are up 31 cents at 19.20 to 100 weight. March milk closed 15 cents higher at $18.63 a 100 weight. Congratulations to Kevin Krenz, current president of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation. He's been elected to a one-year term on the American Farm Bureau Federation's board of directors. And Andrea Broussard's been named vice chair of the American Farm Bureau Federation's education committee. Julie Swenny from Dodge County ended up in the Sweet 16 for the discussion meet. And Natasha Paris, Ripon ag teacher, in the top 10 for the excellence in agriculture competition during the American Farm Bureau Federation's annual meeting.
Can't get enough farm news? The stories you hear and more 24/7 at MidwestFarmReport.com.
Shopping for that special someone can be hard. You want to make sure that gift is perfect. Jewelry is always a great go-to because it lasts forever. Place to go? Goodman's Jewelers. They have the best prices, something for every budget. They have incredible quality jewelry, one-of-a-kind pieces, diamonds, engagement rings, traditional and modern styles, and you can customize your own. Something for a Badger Packer fan? Goodman's Jewelers has it. A true icon in Madison, the city's oldest full-service jewelry store, is your family. Goodman's Jewelers.
Me? I started smoking when I was 13. I always thought when the time came, I could quit. No problem. Then at 28, I tried to go cold turkey, and I found out how hard it really was. I made it all day without a smoke. Right until I met up with the guys. But I learned something that night. In fact, every time I tried to quit, there were more than a few. I learned a little more about what worked and what didn't work for me. And when I realized that I wasn't alone, that most people don't quit on their first or second attempt, I knew there was still hope. Today, I'm an ex-smoker. My only advice is to never, ever give up trying to quit.
If you're trying to quit smoking, the American Lung Association is here to help every step of the way. Visit quitterinyou.org for tools, tips, and stories from smokers we've helped to finally quit for good. The American Lung Association. We support the quitter in you at quitterinyou.org.
Rural Mutual Insurance, keeping Wisconsin strong.
If you're interested in a rewarding career with a strong Wisconsin company, Rural Mutual Insurance is looking to add to their growing team of successful employees and agents. Apply online today at ruralmutual.com/careers.
Rural Mutual Insurance, keeping Wisconsin strong.
Hang on to your tractors. Here's another update. This is the Midwest Farm Report.
The Midwest Farm Report is bringing you the stories behind some of the most historic farms in Wisconsin with our century and sesquicentennial farm salute. The salute is presented to you by our good friends at Compeer Financial, along with the help of the All of Us Research Program. So these are the family farms that have been on the same property owned by the same family for at least 100 years, and in some instances, 150 years. For our latest installment in our farm salute, we are going to head to Waupun and speak with Lori Bauer. Her family has owned the same farm since 1917. Just to give you some perspective, Woodrow Wilson was the president in 1917. That was also the year that the United States officially entered World War I, and the University of Oregon defeated the University of Pennsylvania in the third annual Rose Bowl. Lori joins me right now. And Lori, at what point did you guys decide that you wanted to gather all the materials and send in an application to be recognized as a century farm here in Wisconsin?
Well, I started noticing the signs out in the country. I didn't realize that there was even a program out there. And I thought, and was thinking, wow, we got to be close to that based on my dad is 94 currently, and he was born on the farm. So then I started putting two and two together and asked, look up the deed information and found that, yeah, we owned it since 1917. So,
wow. And your dad's 94 years old?
Correct.
Wow. So he has pretty much spent his entire life on this farm.
He has spent his entire life on that farm, yes.
I'm sure that I know that, like, in my family, my grandparents, I love listening to their farm stories. Does your dad tell good farm stories?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Especially the one that's always neat is when he talks about how his dad owned the big thrashing machine, and then they would go around and thrash all the neighbors' crops, and he'd be up on the hay wagon and in the dust and all that. And then the ladies would all make chicken dinners for the guys with fresh squeezed lemonade and everything. So
I love it. You can't see me, but I always smile when I do these interviews because I love hearing this family history. I'm curious, Lori, how much fun was it to go back and look through all of the materials and these scrapbooks of family history?
It was interesting. And then, Dad had a lot of different photos. I mean, he even had a picture of the thrashing crew. And then the one story that he told us about that he didn't have a picture was when him and his dad and brother went to Oshkosh to get one of their brand new tractors, and they had to drive it home, and they left at like 6 in the morning, didn't get home till 6 at night because it was a slow truck up there and a slow truck down with the tractor at so many miles per hour.
Wow.
So, but yeah.
That is hard
to realize.
It is. And I think about how impatient like people in the modern world are, including myself. I don't know if I'd be able to do that.
I know. Yeah. Well, I guess if they would have had it delivered by train, it would have been like about a 6-month waiting period to get the tractor actually delivered to the home. So that's why they decided to drive and pick it up themselves.
That's a true farmer. They just took matters into their own hands.
Yep.
So, okay, so your dad's 94. So what I never want to assume. So what generation currently owns the farm?
We are, my sister and I are third.
Okay. And are you guys an active farm? Because I always like to make this distinction. You don't have to be an active farm to get this award, but are you?
No. So with Dad, we had a shed fire years ago, and so that kind of took out a lot of Dad's equipment. So then we talked him into, at that time, we talked him into just cash cropping it out to somebody else. So because we had sold off the animals back in like, I think it was like 97 is when we kind of stopped raising steers and cropping the stuff ourselves. It was a hard decision, you know. We missed doing the farming together and stuff, but it was a good decision for my dad's health and everything.
Oh, so. Of course. And yeah, you say, so were you guys beef producers? Or I mean, I guess if you could tell me as much info as you can from the time the farm started to present day, I mean, what type of farming?
Well, it was always a dairy farm from when my grandparents had it to when my mom and dad transitioned into it. And so they had dairy cows on it up until like 1966 or 69 is actually when they sold the last dairy herd. So it was always dairy up until that time. And then dad and mom switched it over to steers and hogs. And then eventually we just, you know, like I say, my dad got to the age where he couldn't do it anymore. So, but yeah, so it was a dairy farm from 1917 to 1969.
Hmm. So what was your childhood like growing up on the farm?
I myself, it wasn't too much so because of, as far as the dairy cow part, because I was only like 7 when they sold the cows. But I hear stories of my older sister and brother on how they used to have to go and bring the the dairy herd in from the pasture and get them in for milking and stuff.
And another thing that I like to ask people is, you know, like I think about myself and how much farming means to my family, and it's just what we've done forever. I'm sure it's no different for you guys.
Right. Yep. But it's still, you know, even though we did do just the steers and the crops, I mean, it still was a matter of getting together and, you know, going out and picking stones, you know, and, you know, cropping the hay and throwing the bales up into the hay mow. And, you know, there's still not any life that's similar to being a farmer.
Mm-mm. No, there's not. And I'm glad that you guys were able to get this recognition. What was it like when you actually got the sign delivered to your house?
That was really interesting. I mean, mom and dad really didn't know too much about it because I kind of wanted to surprise them with it, you know, and stuff. But then, you know, once the state fair got canceled, then the surprise had to change to, it was actually my dad's birthday when we all got together. And then I had him open the envelope with all family members present. And so everybody thought that was pretty neat that we got a 100-year farm sign. So, but now the challenge is trying to figure out where they want to display it. Do they want to display it just in the house, or try and figure out how to make something to put it outside so it don't get damaged in the weather?
Right. I've seen everybody get pretty creative with that this year. Most people put them outside, but yeah, I mean, certainly the Wisconsin elements working against you there.
Exactly.
So I guess, Lori, before I let you go, I'm just trying to think of other things that I should be asking you about. I mean, is there anything that I haven't asked you about that you'd like people to know about your farm? Anything that's unique or that you're especially proud of? Anything like that?
Not too much. I mean, the only thing maybe unique about it is we do have the Rock River that flows around, you know, through it. So, not only did we have the farm life, but we had the river life where we could go and fish however we wanted. And we always would catch nice big northerns out of the river. And so that was always kind of a fun family time that we would spend on a break. We would go down to the river and fish.
Yeah, you kind of had the best of both worlds, it sounds like.
Exactly. We did. So, but no, there's, like I say, there's still nothing like the farm life. And, you know, I don't know what's going to happen to the future of it, if the fourth generation kids are going to keep it or not. You know, it's hard when you don't actually farm it yourself to keep the next generation going on it.
Right. Because who would, if there were to be a fourth generation, who would it actually be?
It would be my daughter and son, and then my sister has two boys. So it'd be four grandchildren to my parents that would actually be the next inheritance of it.
Have they talked about taking over the farm?
Somewhat. You know, it's kind of scary hearing them because they're kind of like, well, we don't know. We hate to say this, but we don't know if we'll keep it or not. you know, because they all got their lives and their lives go in different directions nowadays. It'll be kind of sad if it doesn't, but, you know, it is what it is, and you can't do nothing about it, I guess.
No, you can't. I mean, if anything, you have owned the same farm on the same land since 1917, so 104 years. That is certainly something to be very, very proud of. That's Lori Bauer of Waupun, and that.